The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. The Canadian province of British Columbia was granted an exemption to essentially decriminalize simple possession of very small amounts of some drugs. That exemption runs from January 31st, 2023 to January 31st, 2026. Now, the decriminalization of people who use drugs is one key principle of effective smart drug policies, along with safe supply, safe spaces in which to consume, and the decolonization of drug policies. Canada has for years been well ahead of the U.S. on all of these. Well, work on the fourth decolonization is only just beginning in both countries. Though, having said that, I do think Canada may be doing somewhat better than we are here. I mean, that's not saying a lot, but anyway. Last week, we heard part one of my conversation with Eris Nix of the Drug User Liberation Front in Vancouver, B.C. We ran out of time on that show just as we were starting to talk about Dulf's Compassion Club and the Compassion Club model for safe supply. So let's hear more about that. Dulf's safe supply program is very different from the medicalized safer supply programs that are in existence. And you just had another drug distribution event a couple of days ago. Yeah. How did it go?
I mean, we do it every time the coroner releases numbers, right? And that's probably about once a month. And now we're on the 13th distribution. Like, this has been going on for so long. Even just that element of the crisis, us giving away free drugs when they announce these numbers. So it's become very mundane. And the press in Canada has ceased to care. In fact, the international press also, by extension, I suppose. No one gives a what we're doing. I think more importantly is the fact that we're running a brick and mortar store and we're on month six of doing that. And, we haven't caused a single, have not caused a single overdose, and we haven't caused, you know, harm as far as we're concerned from the evidence we're gathering.
You've opened up a brick and mortar shop.
Yes, but it's only for specific folks.
Well,
like you have to be granted access. Not anyone can just walk off the street, if you follow what I mean.
All right, on. So, I mean, I worked in the medical marijuana industry many years ago. Part of the time while it was regulated, I worked in medical marijuana when it wasn't being regulated yet. And that was the same thing. You had, you know, we made sure people were, you know, actually part of this medical marijuana program. They'd gotten their doctor's recommendation. We, you know, had to make sure their paperwork was correct and in order and, you know, and current.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Our model is totally demedicalized. So when you say you had to make sure the paperwork and the doctor and the blah, 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 it's not like that. It's more so we're running an evaluation, like a scientific evaluation, right? And part of the structuring of any kind of scientific research study is criteria for inclusion and exclusion. We ran our model as a randomized control, right? So we had 21 people who could access the store initially. We had another 21 people that we just studied and ran the evaluation on. And after 3 months, we were like, this is highly unethical that we have half of the people can access the drugs and the other half can't. We should give everyone access. So we bump the control into the other, into the part of the study, the treatment group, it's called, the part of the study where they have access to the drugs. And now we're on month six of running that project. And we'll probably end up adding more people. Honestly, our major thing is like, we want statistical significance and we want to be able to say, you know, scientifically, this program is helping people. And right now, because of the size and the breadth of time that we've been running the project for, we don't have enough statistical significance to feel comfortable releasing any data to the public. We've sent stuff to the government, obviously, to be like, we think this is working, but, you know, from the standpoint of science, we don't have a low enough p-value yet.
It just needs to expand, which
its
own problems,
it's
obviously.
It's kind of like a catch-22. Like, it's all up when you start thinking about it, because I'm like, we asked for sanctioning in August 2021, right? We sent a request to Health Canada in August, 2 years ago almost, well, a year and a half ago, I suppose, requesting that we be allowed to run this project and see what happens. And they said, no, you're using the illegal drugs. And this leads to this whole other court case judicial review Dolph is involved in, right? It's very hard to scale. I'm like, we're trafficking a kilogram of like the Schedule One drugs a month. No, it's horrible. I like having to do that illegally. You know, they should have a factory filled with robots. It shouldn't be too like in the downtown east side and like with no money doing this, right? But they won't listen to logic or reason. I'm like, we're so, and it's probably why I've been so frazzled this entire time, but I'm just like, we're working 20-hour days around the clock to make this thing go, and that's just for 40 people, right? So you imagine adding another 40. Then you're trafficking 2 kilos of drugs a month. I'm like, at what point do they intervene and arrest us or stop us or, you know? And it doesn't seem like there's a straightforward answer to that whatsoever.
Well, that's good for perspective. Running an unregulated dispensary was a little bit of a, you know, there was a little bit of stress involved, a little bit of anxiety, but for the most part, hey, it's weed, it's the medical, you know, all things considered, you know, we can manage this, it'll be okay. That's a whole other level. That is a whole other level.
Yeah, and that's the thing. People frequently come to me and they're like, blah, 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 weed. Like, I worked in a compassion club with weed. And I'm like, yes, we sell heroin and cocaine and methamphetamine. You know, very different. And I'm like, not to say I think the drugs are any more dangerous or whatever. I'm like, honestly, I don't think the majority of drugs were. They're certainly not as dangerous as alcohol, right? So I'm like, from that perspective, I don't really feel like I'm harming people. But from the perspective of where we're classified by the law, I'm like, they're like, you go to jail forever. Jail, 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 jail. Like, don't even think about it, right? So, well.
Well,
I'm like, they should really exempt us. They should either tell us to stop with force. You know, they've told us what we already knew what we were doing was illegal. They're like, you're contravening the law. I'm like, of course we are. But I'm like, they haven't told us to stop. And again, there's no way of concisely explaining this because the problem is so Kafkaesque and insane. Our local health authority funds us to operate. Our local health authority has given us an overdose prevention site designation, which exempts people from certain parameters of the CDSA in the space. We also have a federal Section 56 exemption, not the one we requested, but we are exempt from possession, manufacture, possession with intent, trafficking, all this kooky, but only for the purposes of drug checking, which is not, there's no precedent or clarity about what that means. And then, so we have these exemptions, you know, and then we're running this store and people are coming in and buying a kilo of drugs every month and using, and nothing's going wrong. No one's getting harmed. We don't have any guns. There's no threat of violence, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, meanwhile, it's so illegal, we could go to jail for 10 years. But I'm like, all these people are inculcated. And everyone's like, we're just waiting to see if it works or not. And I'm like, you should probably sanction the project while you wait. Like, I'm still at risk, you know. And then it goes even further to that. I'm like, let's say the government did choose to flex and the RCMP or the VPD come and kick down our door and arrest us all. I'm like, Every health authority in Vancouver is signed off on some piece of paper telling us we can operate. You know, I'm like, where are we going to draw the line on who's liable for what's happening? Well, when you start thinking about it like this, you just look at this and I'm like, you could have just said, yeah, go for it. Like, we'll work with you on the limited scale pilot you're running, you know, whatever. And especially with the urgent public health site needs designation, that Section 56 there, supposedly the Minister of Mental Health and Addictions is supposed to be monitoring what we're doing and communicating with the federal Minister of Health, neither of which will talk to us because we're suing the Health Canada. Well, I'm just like, at the end of the day, these are people's lives that you know, risk, right? And that's what I think isn't getting talked about. Like, everyone wants to talk about conjecture or, you know, these kind of tangential things, but no one wants to talk about the root of the problem, which is that 6 people a day are dying, you know, 40 people per week. That's like a bus full of people die a week in BC, in one province in the country, a bus full of people. And like I'm saying, in some areas in the north, that number's so bad, it's like 1 in 1,000 people die there of opiate overdoses, right? It's a crazy situation, and that's why I feel lost. As soon as I have run through all that, I'm like, I don't even know what the hell I'm talking about anymore, you know?
And again, in context, the overdose rate in the province of BC, as for the entire province, is much higher than the rate down here in the U.S. And
Yes. I mean, we're the only part of Canada that has a public health crisis. I think that's why our intervention is so... It could have only originated here. Like, we'd only be able to run a brick-and-mortar store that sells these drugs in this context.
And you're not... I mean, you're not doing the publicity-seeking thing. There are a couple of... I've seen at least one... person who's been talking quite a lot about opening a brick and mortar shop up there in BC.
Try and do the publicity thing. No one will listen to us. That's what I don't understand. I'm like, when that article came out, we were like, we've been doing this for 6 months, and the media would just like, did not, no one reached out to talk to you. In fact, during this last action, you were probably, actually, I think some local news interviewed Jeremy, but one of the only people that reached out to us. Well, I'm like, we've been running a store for 6 months. I'm like, and in this legal gray zone, you'd think that would be newsworthy. You know, and a store at that is doing no harm according to our rigorous scientific evaluation, you know. Well, I think the accusation you get when you're someone like me is like, oh, you're gonna kill everyone and you're going to need guns to protect blah, 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 whatever. Like, you're going to need all this, like, violence, ostensibly, to, like, hold up this institution. And I'm like, we are the least violent. Like, that's so far from the truth. People's understanding of what this could look like and solutions to this crisis are so disconnected from reality. It's kind of horrifying. And I'm like, everybody's going to die. Maybe I'll go to jail. I don't actually think, like, we'll go to jail, but we could. Anytime they want to pull the plug and send us to prison, I'm like, it would be very easy. Because the other thing is, every crime we've ever committed is all above board. We've never hidden any of our illegal activity. And that's obviously something that makes Dolph unique. But I'm like, if they wanted to get us, I couldn't be like, we didn't, you know, there's no plausible deniability.
This is a conversation with Aris Nix of the Drug User Liberation Front in Vancouver, BC. We'll have more in a moment. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh.
I think you have to ground Dolph in the Downtown East Side context, right? And this is the problem. I think we become... Our request becomes disconnected from its point of origin. I'm like, in my neighborhood, I open my front door, there are people dead on my doorstep. That's why we run this project. No other reason, da-da-dee-da-da-dee-da. We're not saying, open a heroin store on every corner, you know, next to every school, hey, you know, start selling heroin at the convenience store. I'm like, let us run an experimental pilot research study to see what happens when people get access to these drugs tested in a demedicalized context. We're the only people doing that, though. You know, there's no demedicalized, first of all, and I'm like, this all goes back to the drug laws. The drug laws are designed to medicalize access to opiates. The way you're supposed to access anything, you know, that's considered a drug, minus tobacco and alcohol and now cannabis, is through a doctor. And they're the supreme gatekeepers. And even if you go back to the single convention, I'm like, it's all endorsed by countries that have the monopoly on the medicalized drug supply and it bans like the local organic, you know, the largely the global south. It bans them from producing drugs. Well, I'm like, this whole situation is so just sad and up. But then you look at the state of affairs of humanity and you're like, we have nuclear hardware armed to the teeth, you know, we're 90 seconds to midnight or whatever. I'm like, things pretty crazy up there. And if you're smart, you'd be investing in armaments or something, Boeing. That's how you make money. Well, I'm like, it's dark outside and hell's hot or whatever the EMF says. I'm like, it is not a good time. It's a very bad time out there right now. It's very crazy. And then you wonder, like, has humanity ever had a good time? And, you know, Jodorowsky, who's this Chilean surrealist film director, has some quote in his book where it's just like, he's basically endorsing, or the character in this book, I should say, I'm not going to pigeonhole him on this, but is like, you have to have mutually assured destruction. Like, humanity's will just continue arming itself and in order to become more powerful, you also have to become more dangerous and it becomes more risky. I can't wait till we're 10 seconds to midnight. Well, I'm like, I don't know. And if you look at even war in Ukraine, I know there's a little divorce from our topic, but I'm like, this is all just military profiteering at the expense of human life. Like, everyone's like, ah, the threat of nuclear war. I'm like, they're not going to nuke each other. They just got to go shoot a million rounds of bullets. I'm like, the U.S. just signed a whatever $4 billion trillion arms deal. I'm like, it's all just business, man. And that's a sad, horrific thing. It's the same thing with the drug laws. It's all just business to these people. And I'm like, human life in the face of big business is totally expendable. Stolf does two things, and one of those things is in court. We give out drugs every time the coroner announces how many people died for free. We're like, here's the answer. You know, and that, it's almost stupid to me now because it's not effective. And we did it initially for the publicity. It was very kooky. Everyone was like, oh, wacky group giving out free drugs. But I'm like, what's effective is the store, which somehow doesn't generate any publicity at all. The store, in fact, the first time Dolph ever gave out drugs, maybe the second time, actually, the first time we did it with like a success of garnering press was when we submitted this request. Right, August 31st, 2021, the request to run the store. And then eventually we're like, hey, you're not answering us. We're just going to do this. And then they're like, well, then the answer is no. And then we're like, well, then we're going to take you to court because that's the wrong decision because people have human rights in this country, supposedly. And now we're in this court process where the court record is 1,200 pages long against Health Canada, where Health Canada is like, citing the UN and being like, yeah, but we're trying, which is like the amount of red herring and anachronistic bringing up to this, you know, federal court is wild. And all I do is sit here and read the law and then, you know, go down the street and package drugs and then come back here and read the, like, my life sucks. I'm not having fun. And it's making me crazy. And I'm like, we are, because I'm like, if we're squabbling over whether this project that is operationalized should be able to run, I'm like, we are real far off from stopping all these people from dying. It's like climate change almost, where I'm like, good God, you're never going to get global. Like, well, you need global policy. You need everyone aligned on something. And you're not going to get that because people use nationalism to foster business, you know, and that's why countries disagree on drug laws. And at the end of the day, you're gonna have to watchman them on some importing an alien into New York and killed 10 million people. Now you all have to work together. Don't tell anyone, you know. So whoever's got that plan, whoever's got the Ozymandias alien in New York plan, I'm sitting here waiting for it, and I would love to give you a high five.
Back up for a second. As I realized that I was, I'm unclear. Okay, so You've done the events, you've done like 13 of those. But now the brick and mortar store, that's a separate thing. Yeah. It's not just like you have the store so that you can do these events and that's the only things that you've done.
No, it's the opposite way. In an ideal world, we would be able to, I mean, if you saw this thing, there's a lot of stuff we can't disclose because it would make it known where we are. And again, I'm like, we have, you know, $30,000 of drugs on hand at any time. And our security infrastructure, we have no money. So everything's made out of like cardboard and it's not like we're behind bulletproof glass. Well, I'm like, in an ideal world, we have multiple millions of dollars. It's all done by robots. Anyone that needs drugs could come and get them. Like, I'm like, if you're going to go out and buy drugs anyway, you should be able to go to a thing where you can buy drugs and know exactly what you're getting. And I guarantee you, any street level dealer that's like, I test my, I'm like, if you have any sales velocity whatsoever, there's no goddamn way you test your drugs with enough frequency to know what's in every batch you're selling. And especially in this neighborhood. Well, I'm like, you need an organization like Dolph that can hold $30,000 of drugs at one time so we never run out, so we can know exactly what people are getting.
Well, and you do drug checking. You really do drug checking, right? I mean, that is, so you've been using
these. At the end of the day, but I'm like, because of the nature of the law, it's trafficking. All we do is buy here, we take it, we extract a slice of the drugs in the illicit drug market, test them, and then reintroduce them at the exact same price we bought them for. You know, and in turn, we pass on the economy of scale savings to the consumer. Well, I'm like, the government really doesn't like that for some reason. They're like, you support organized crime. I'm like, what does that have to do with what we're doing, you know? Like, I'm like, not really. I'm like, if you get a criminologist, the problem is people don't understand what we're doing. And no one wants to put in the effort to understand. If you get a criminologist, if you're like, look, man, because we're not jacking up the price at the consumer, like to buy a point of crystal meth from us, it costs $1.75. To buy that on the street, $15, high end, right? Well, I'm like, the reduction in cost is so astronomical. I'm like, that's like $14 almost not going into the hands of organized crime on every point of drugs. I'm like, are we really supporting, like, we're actually preventing them from getting more money, right?
You're also showing people exactly how much those things are really cost. I mean, the profit margin is kind of scary.
Yeah, it's not kind of scary. It's just business. That's the thing. I'm like, it's all business. That's the problem. The courts, the prosecutor, the chief prosecutor, the judge, the cop that's arresting you, it's all business, man. They don't want to get defunded because they don't want to not have jobs, you know? Well, I'm like, this doesn't make, the business here is human misery, and business is good, and that's sadistic and, you know? And that's a reality of the fact that nobody wants to accept. I'm like, we should kill all these people. People are like, oh, if Hitler was alive, I'd kill him. I'm like, Hitler is alive. His name's Elon Musk. Go get him. You know, we're the head of some bank. Worse people than Elon Musk. Like a guy that runs some hedge fund. He's probably walking around New York City. You can just stab him with a knife. I'm like, you want to kill Hitler? Go do it. Sorry, I shouldn't.
Well, no, there's a, when you say,
this is what runs through my head, though. I'm just saying.
I dig.
Where you go.
When you mentioned the, you know, they don't want to lose their jobs, they don't want to lose their funding. It's like, well, you know, I don't know how well you're doing up there in BC.
No,
down
the
here.
Cops, the police in Vancouver have $1 million a day budget. And to like spend it on like cannon, sound cannons that make you your pants or whatever. I'm like, highly militarized police force that also endorses city council. What is going on? And then city council's like flexing on Bandu. I'm like, the crazy kooky stuff that's happening in this place. Rather than people working together to solve problems, it just doesn't make any sense. What makes sense, again, to go back to the big business human misery thing, I'm like, it makes sense when you see who's making the money. which is the cops and the courts and the everyone involved in addictions medicine or with a paid job in harm reduction. I'm like, all of those people, even the people that seem on side, don't want to admit the problem to go away because the problem is their identity. And it would crush them to have the existential crisis. Oh, I'm no longer a harm reduction hottie. Like, I'm like, you survive on human misery as much as anyone else in this economy. And that's my thing. I'm like, I want to work myself into obsolescence. If I never had to do this job again, I would be so happy. Well, it's not going to go that way.
You're doing God's work for what it's worth.
I don't know what it's worth. That's the problem. I'm like, is this even worthwhile? I'm like, what am I doing? I know one thing. In the population I'm targeting, I'm reducing the amount of deaths, which was the goal of the project. That's all I can say I know that I'm doing. Other than that, I'm like, when you look at the bigger picture, I'm like, ooh, buddy, I don't know. And if helping a small population is God's work, which I guess it is, that's on God.
You're helping people. You're helping keep people alive, and you are demonstrating through your acts that it is possible to stand up. And yeah, people, well, you know, they don't have to. They don't have to knock people down. They don't have to knock people down if people just lie down in fear. You know, if people are afraid of just of standing up and doing something, then they don't have to do anything. And if you do stand up and do something, the best that
I'm like, maybe it's a good thing that people don't do anything, because when people start doing, bad things happen. Like, I think I agree with them there, but I'm just like, what's the answer? Like, the answer to the death is legalization. I'm like, what happens when you legalize? Like, do you generate second tier problems by doing that? I'm like, can society handle that because of how much prohibitionist rhetoric you've built out? Russia loves alcohol.
Well, and if you look at the kind of job we've done with alcohol, with the number of people, I mean, the economic cost, the social cost. I'm the child of two alcoholics. I stopped using alcohol not very long ago. I shouldn't have been all this time, but I did, and I finally stopped.
I love drinking and doing cocaine, and if it didn't make me feel so bad, I'd do it every day. But I'm like, it makes me feel horrible. Well, I'm like, it's a balancing act. I did just quit vaping, though.
That was my conversation with Aris Nix from the Drug User Liberation Front in Vancouver, BC. You can learn more about DULF and help support their work at their website, dulf.ca. That's dulf.ca.
There's a time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
And for now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. This has been Century of Lies. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policies and the failed war on drugs. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying
for
so
the
long.
Drug Truth Network,
so
this
long.
Is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the century of lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.